no era un movimiento guerrillero, era un movimiento civil de un montón de personas, de organizaciones políticas, sociales, de personas de diferentes procedencias, pero fue brutalmente aniquilado. Es decir, hubo candidatos presidenciales como Jaime Pardo Leal y Bernardo Jaramillo Osa, senadores, representantes, pero la gran mayoría de gente asesinada eran campesinos.
Lo que yo llamo derecha un poco extrema y corrupta, que vio que empezaban a perder el poder en algunos municipios del país, algunas regiones, y que entonces dijeron, pero ¿cómo es posible que unos haciendo política con el discurso y otros se mantengan armados allá respaldándolos, o todos en la cama o todos en el suelo? Entonces se autojustificaron y dijeron, nosotros también vamos a tener nuestro elemento armado, y empiezan a unirse con los paramilitares que ya estaban mezclados con narcotráfico y demás, para no dejarse quitar el poder en las regiones.
Cuando vire a mi Dios,
efectivamente fui representante a la Cámara por el Caquetá, me desempeñé unos meses en el Congreso, pero los espacios realmente se cerraron. Los mismos agentes de DAS que se nos asignaba para la seguridad se encargaban de hacer la inteligencia, estaban al tanto de nuestros movimientos, de nuestros contactos, de las falencias en la seguridad, en los desplazamientos, y programaban, como lo hicieron con Jaime Pardo Leal, de esta manera, los atentados. Bueno, esto obligó al secretariado de las FARC dar la orden de recogerlo, creo que se hizo de manera oportuna. Recuerdo muy bien que me alcanzaron a colocar una corona de orquídeas en un lugar donde no pasan cortejos fúnebres, con una dedicatoria, ¿no? Entonces Manuel Marulanda Jacob Arenas me mandaron la razón, Iván, debe regresarse inmediatamente.
A pesar de que se dan esos procesos, hay un sector de la sociedad que sigue pensando que esos guerreros son los malos a los que hay que exterminar. Y entonces no deja de lanzarse a una política de exterminio que es una prolongación de la guerra cuando se suponía que la guerra había terminado.
Sí, claro, porque eso tiene mucho que ver con la actitud de las élites colombianas, que a diferencia del Cono Sur, digamos, en el Cono Sur ha habido dictaduras. Una dictadura es una cosa brutal, pero clara. Aquí siempre se ha gobernado en democracia y hay más muertos y más desaparecidos que los que hubo en Chile, por ejemplo.
La tradición cobarde de asesinar al adversario es larga en la historia de Colombia. En 1782, Galán, el comunero, es traicionado, ejecutado y descuartizado. En 1830, Antonio José de Sucre cae en una emboscada en Berruecos. Se dirigía a Quito para reunirse con su familia. En 1914, el general Rafael Uribe Uribe, caudillo liberal, es muerto a hachazos a un costado del Capitolio Nacional.
Entonces, cuando llegó el general Duarte, el Guadalupe Salcedo salió, le tendió el fusil y le dijo, aquí está mi fusil, y están mis guerrilleros. Usted manda. Le digo, guerrilleros, buenos días. Todo el mundo. Buenos días, mi general. Mi general.
Lo que el abogado acusador, el doctor Mañaluna, descubrió, él hizo desenterrar el cuerpo de Guadalupe, es que él tenía disparos en las plantas de las manos. Él salió con las manos en alto y le dispararon. Entonces, y él fue un hombre que, digamos, entregó las armas para hacer la paz de Colombia, y lo engañaron. Entonces, pues eso es lo que no queremos que suceda ahora.
Por lo pronto, lo que sí ha quedado bien claro es que bajo la nueva Constitución no hay ningún espacio para la violencia política, como tampoco lo hay para otras formas reprochables de autoritarismo, de intolerancia, de privilegio y de atropello.
En Casa Verde, porque estamos dialogando con el gobierno de Gaviria, explorando las posibilidades de la participación de las FARC y del ELN, del EPL, en la Asamblea Nacional Constituyente, y estamos hablando de los términos, de las condiciones para hacer efectiva esa participación.
Está bien, se requería la operación, pero haberla realizado el mismo día en que se convocaba las elecciones de la constituyente fue un gravísimo error estratégico. Es decir, las FARC estaban tratando de ver si entraban, si negociaban su ingreso a la constituyente y demás. Ahí no se había concretado nada, pero todavía no se había acabado el tiempo, porque la constituyente empezó a sesionar en febrero del 91. Entonces, haberlo hecho ese mismo día fue darles un portazo en la nariz.
Ese era el argumento del gobierno en Caracas. Ya miren que el muro cayó, se está pensando distinto ahora, ustedes no pueden quedar reducidos a unos dinosaurios o a unos seres del Jurásico. Aquí hay que dar el paso ya de la guerrilla a movimiento político, hay que dar el paso ya a la legalidad. Y nosotros, recuerdo bien, respondimos que la caída del muro no quitó el hambre, no resolvió los problemas de injusticia que vive el pueblo colombiano, no resolvió el problema del desempleo, de la vivienda, de la salud, de la educación. Entonces, que nosotros pensábamos que las causas por las cuales nos habíamos levantado en armas seguían vigentes y que por lo tanto consideramos vigente la lucha armada, como lo seguimos considerando hasta el día de hoy.
A diferencia de lo que se hizo con los grupos guerrilleros desmovilizados, con la FARC y con el ELN, se empezó a negociar la agenda nacional de reformas económicas, políticas, sociales, institucionales, con unos grupos que no tienen, hay manera de ver, ninguna representatividad social ni política en el país, se representan a sí mismos.
¿Y qué podía negociar un Estado estrenando constitución con una guerrilla que quería cambios constitucionales? Ahí no había nada que hacer. Es decir, eso fue por mostrar deseo de paz, pero ahí no había espacio para poder negociar.
Se perseguía un sitiamiento de la fuerza guerrillera, lo cual implicaba concesiones estratégicas enormes que nosotros no estábamos dispuestos a considerar.
Luego nos fuimos para Tlaxcala, México. El tema que se pretendió discutir fue el de la política económica. Y ustedes saben, estábamos con Gaviria, la política neoliberal, Rudolf Gómez, el ministro de Hacienda. Entonces esos temas no tenían cómo encontrar un punto que llevara al consenso, al entendimiento.
Y aquí digo la ruptura en palabras pues de gubernamentales, fue una acción del Ejército Popular de Liberación con la retención de Argelino Durán Quintero y con la muerte en cautiverio pues de Argelino Durán Quintero, que es lo que produce, digamos, la ruptura durante el proceso.
Y ahora el ejército sabría cómo era el infierno de la selva.
Se perdió.
Este ha sido un fragmento del documental Diálogos de Paz, historias reales del conflicto colombiano de boca de sus propios protagonistas. Y aquí concluye esta edición del informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toshti y de Norma Martínez, se despide de tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Free Radio Santa Cruz is losing its studio location, and so we reach out to you with $500 in hand. A reward for 1 year location. We can pay some rent. We do need a bathroom facility, some small square footage, electricity. Contact us if you know a location that can help. FRSC@freakradio.org.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And that was Amira Baraka, famous poet and sometime radical revolutionary. Stay tuned next for Bathrob Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Love this loft. I'll take it.
Welcome home, Agnes.
Just look at the people out in the street, not sitting in cars. They're moving their feet to different drummers and different beats. This place is so cool, I feel the heat. And this is the place I be. Look at that Chevy, must be older than me. That building, it says 1903. I can feel the people who lived here before. I love what I see and I want to see more. And this is the place I be. A man selling tacos from El Salvador. And look, there's a sweatshop up.
And that is the first cut from City for Sale by the Santa Cruz Mime Troupe. Oops, not the Santa Cruz Mime Troupe, San Francisco Mime Troupe, but they were in Santa Cruz. And that was this last weekend. They were doing another production. They were doing Mr. Smith Goes to Obscuristan. And that was a lot of fun. Even though we had to have Christopher Crone up there cavorting about on the stage and taking credit and posturing and so forth. Nonetheless, I was glad that the Mime Troupe came to town. A little sad that they didn't talk more about our local situation. It was quite a large audience on the Saturday and Sunday that they were there. Would have been nice if they had mentioned the downtown ordinances and mentioned the actual situation in Santa Cruz. Of course, that might be considered biting the bureaucrat that feeds them, because they do have to kind of grease the wheels locally in order to get in. I think Rachel O'Malley, the mayor's wife, is instrumental in helping them proceed. I'm not saying that she wouldn't be favorable to some hard-hitting criticism of the downtown ordinances, and even that the mayor himself, Christopher Crone, who actually voted against all the downtown ordinances, wouldn't favor it too. But it's kind of hard to get establishment liberals to talk about local issues that might offend local folks. We found that out 3 or 4 years ago. Some of us actually initially got the Mime Troupe to agree when they were performing up at UCSC to mention the sleeping ban. It was the time when David Silva and others were pressing for a sleeping ban repeal initiative. I think it was 98 or so, maybe 97. And the Mime Troupe company broke its word, and we learned that the director had decided to censor the script based on concerns they might offend the UCSC administration. And so I issued a flyer, Mime Troupe or Mum Troupe, which enraged the director of the Mime Troupe. But I don't know if it was the same director, but I chatted with the librettist, the fellow who wrote the script for Mr. Smith Goes to Obscuristan, a very funny show. And they were very nice. But again, we don't have much local. But their music is wonderful, and their lyrics are great. And we're going to be playing some of that stuff throughout the show, I am anyway. And that's for the next 2 hours as you tune to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. That's the name of our show here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The topic is civil rights in Santa Cruz, civil liberties on the streets, the disappearing civil liberties on the streets of Santa Cruz. Some of us are still struggling. I think a lot of us are still struggling to, in our own way, retain and reassert those basic rights, which the anti-homeless downtown ordinances took away on August 23rd when they went into force. Even though they're not being enforced, they are now law on the books, and they in essence criminalize sitting, street performing, and other activities 14 feet from a bench, 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a kiosk. Essentially, it rules out 95% of the downtown sidewalk area for any kind of political, musical, artistic, or just plain associational activity that involves sitting, for example, on the sidewalk, even if you're not blocking the sidewalk. It's a complete gentrification exercise disguised as a conduct law supposedly to deal with sexual harassment, vandalism, violence, and rudeness downtown. And it's hard to even say that with a straight face, but Riley and Porter did, and still like to maintain that fiction. I sat in the same subcommittee with Riley and Porter 2 days ago. They had a meeting of the Downtown Decorum Committee. It actually, I guess, isn't really called decorum. They were considering decorum as one of the issues. They talked a lot about cutting back public comment and public cutting back the amount of time to facilitate speedier city council hearings on trees and other issues of that sort. And, you know, it was interesting to me. Riley and Porter are nice enough individuals, you know, and even Fitzmaurice, who chaired the committee, treated me civilly. I treated him civilly. But I found myself wondering what I was doing in the same room with these people and why I was even bothering to be there. I mean, I was trying to bring up issues about expanding public comment and so forth, and it really wasn't on their agenda. They didn't muzzle me, but it was sort of made clear that unless I stuck with their very specific agenda, you know, I wouldn't be welcome there. And that's, of course, the way it's been for individuals going to city council through the last 4 years, indeed for the last 20 years to a large extent, with limited exceptions when people can actually mobilize sufficient interest in the community to move forward. Anyway, Mime Troupe stuff is going to be coming on frequently today, although we've got some interesting interviews hopefully coming up, depending whether the connections get made. One is from Sacramento attorney Kelly Tanalepi, or Tanalepi, actually. She's the attorney who won recently. You may have heard her. She was interviewed on this station about 2 weeks ago. She won the case of Ed McManus, a homeless man accused of camping in Sacramento, a city which, like Santa Cruz, has virtually no place for homeless people to legally sleep, but still insists on harassing, criminalizing, hounding, and essentially depriving them of basic human rights every night based on the whim of this police officer or that. And Kelly won those cases, three of them, for a fellow named Ed McManus, who had a number of dogs. It wasn't the most photogenic character from what I hear. But the jury believed that she proved the necessity defense. We're going to be talking with her about a new trial coming around the bend. Apparently the city attorney hasn't had enough, taken enough blows on the chin. He wants to come back for some more, and hopefully he'll get them. And we'll find some another jury will say, please don't take this to us. What happened was the first jury, I think they threw out one of the counts and they hung on the other two, which means they were not unanimous. They didn't unanimously say quit. They didn't unanimously say convict. There was a mixture of the 12 people who were there. And so the city attorney had the option to retry, and he did. The district attorney wanted to have nothing to do with it, but the city attorney said, no, let's go ahead and make sure these homeless people don't clutter up our riverbank. We've got to have some tools, as Chief Belcher likes to say, here in Santa Cruz for dealing with the homeless. So we may be having Kelly Tanalepi. She should be actually calling in soon, and I'm hoping we can hear from her. We're also going to be interviewing another Sacramento victory participant, some folks from SHOC, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee. You may remember a couple of months ago, you regular listeners, I went up to Sacramento to attend the Right to Sleep rally. The Right to Sleep walk and rollers rolled through town and walked through town mid-June, bringing to Governor Davis the need to decriminalize the right to sleep and asking that he declare a law against sleep a hate crime. Governor Davis, of course, wouldn't even see the homeless people who brought this forward. Instead, police arrested us on the grass area of the Capitol where it's legal to be 24 hours a day, and we weren't breaking any laws. In fact, police had previously told us that they had no problem with us being there, but then the next shift decided differently. Again, police, as in Santa Cruz, making it up as they go, making their own choices, and then the city council scurrying to catch up with them with the downtown ordinances. At least that's how it looks to me. But in Sacramento, a similar thing. And we were arrested on, eight of us, on two serious charges, misdemeanor crimes, $1,000 fines, year in jail, for illegal lodging, which is essentially a catch-all law that is used to harass homeless people. It's also known as 647J, the penal code. And then another code section, failure to disperse from the scene of a riot. And, of course, the riot involved about 25 people quietly sitting on the grass at 2 in the morning talking with each other. It was quite a threat. And I'm actually going to be playing you. I have the tape from that scene. My tape recorder was taken by the police, but I was able, through strong protest, getting it back. Sometimes strong protest actually works, and it's impressive when it does. And we were held in jail and under grim conditions, some of us for as many as 16 hours. There's a story about it in this month's Street Spirit, in case you want to check it out. That's the homeless newspaper sold on the streets here in Santa Cruz. You can find it at the Downtown for All table, which shows up, if we're lucky, every day at 4:30, right across from the Cinema 9 Theater at Cooper and Pacific Streets. It's down there now, I think, or at least it was when I left about half an hour ago. Maybe it's packed up by now. But Street Spirit has a story on the Sacramento protest, but the big news is, and we're going to be hearing this from the SHOC group, that all charges have been dropped, that the misdemeanor charges against us aren't going to be pressed, just as the charge against me for raising my arm when in a you're a fascist, you're acting like a fascist motion at City Council here in Santa Cruz way back in March. I was arrested for that, held in jail, and then no charges were ever filed. Same thing is happening there. In essence, the police use these laws to frighten, drive away, break up First Amendment activity, and then they don't stand up in court. But, of course, unless you have an attorney committed to a long civil suit that tries to get money out of the city or out of the, in this case, I guess it would be the state agencies involved, you don't really get any redress. So that's going to be coming up. A couple of quick announcements. Well, there's also another interview coming up with activist and a local, I will call him an insider, I'd say, Fred Geiger, who is, he was part of the brain trust of Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone when they were running for city council and when they were on the city council in the first sunny days after they were elected. And Fred and I had some different opinions on what that was all about. But I think Fred is... He's a sage observer of what's a lot of what happens at city council. And there's an item coming up on tomorrow's court calendar, a couple actually, but one of them that I'm going to ask him to comment on, which is a lawsuit by one of the city council candidates claiming that Cynthia Matthews and Mike Rotkin are illegally running for office because they have to wait a full term, or I should say a full 2 years. It actually isn't a full term. A term is 4 years. We stagger our city council terms here. We're going to be electing 3 members this year, 4 members in 2 years, then 3 members again for the 7-member city council. But Rotkin and Matthews were in office until 2000. But they, according to the lawsuit by this candidate, they really can't run again until late November, because that's technically 2 years if you're taking it to the letter of the law. And Rotkin and Matthews are claiming, no, that's not how it's been done. That's not the letter of the law. There's a lot of discussion about that. And tomorrow that issue will hit the courts. I believe it's going to be in Judge Robert Addick's court it's at 10 o'clock. I could be wrong about that. Maybe it's at 9. I have a couple other things going on. Tomorrow morning there's also the downtown commission meeting. They start at 8:30 at City Hall. They are looking into the so-called exemptions and making leaning against public buildings, actually against private buildings. Public, it's already illegal to lean. No, it's not. It's not illegal to lean against public property. It's illegal to sit, stand, or lie on public property that's not intended or customarily used for that purpose. And what they're trying to do now is to make it illegal to lean against a piece of private property. And that's going to come back on September 10th, but it's going to be considered first by the Downtown Commission tomorrow, August 30th, 8:30 a.m. in the morning at City Hall, as well as the so-called exemptions, which are the spaces where musicians and street performers and political activists will be able to set up their tables free from the 14-foot limitations. In actuality, because of the new draconian anti-homeless laws and laws that also severely impact political tablers and street performers, as most people know, there's virtually no space left on Pacific Avenue and probably no space left in any other commercial or business district under the letter of the law. And this, of course, enables police to selectively go after tablers that they choose to harass, ignore others, and it also allows merchants to selectively target political causes they don't want around them. I suspect the law may be unconstitutional, but it may not, because it may be an appropriate time, place, manner restriction, and we'll have to see what's happening with that. And Fred Geiger, I'm going to ask him to comment on that. We may even get a call from Tom Noddy, who's, of course, our bubble expert, the only man who actually is referred to almost by name in the ordinance. His name isn't there, but a special exemption was put in. Some say for him, some say for the mega bubble blower. You see him downtown sometimes on weekends at the intersections of some of the streets with Pacific with this huge wand blowing monstrous 4 or 5 foot bubbles, huge bubbles. And that is actually a part of the law now. I hadn't been aware of it until Tom Noddy made me aware of it by emailing me the text of the current law that went into effect on August 23rd. Other things that are happening, the Santa Cruz Service Corps headquarters at River and Highway 1, River and Highway 1, or actually it's Coral and River Streets down there, which had been a disputed center between Larry Templeton's Camp Paradise and folks with Camp Hope, and then Paul Lee, in essence, ousted everybody except the Larry Templeton group, and then there was some sort of kind of informal reconciliation through the ever-pacific and diplomatic efforts of John Earth. That whole place is going to be demolished on September 1st, I understand, or at least the folks are going to have to move out, and it will be demolished shortly thereafter, not because anything is going to be built there, but because this is sort of a requirement for some kind of funding, even though they haven't raised the funds for the so-called family shelter that's going to be up there. They're going to eliminate this Santa Cruz Service Corps Center. And that's going to be happening very soon. If you want to get in touch with the Santa Cruz Service Corps, you better call them in the next day or two, because they're not going to be around, at least at that number anymore. 423-8636 is the number to call if you want to reach the Santa Cruz Service Corps and leave them a message. A couple of other messages from me. John Stewart, you may know, a local activist particularly active in the struggle against psychiatric oppression, the mental health monster that masquerades as a healer, the mental health system where you can be incarcerated and forcibly drugged. He is currently being held over the Hill against his will, and he has a habeas corpus hearing, a writ of habeas corpus hearing, coming up on September 10th. He has been temporarily conserved, and he wants to fight that conservatorship, and he's requesting folks come to his hearing. And that's going to be September 10th in Superior Court, probably in the morning, but I'll try to give you more updates as that date draws closer. We also have some bad news about AB 1421. That's the bill we were talking about a week ago, David Boush. He called in, a week ago Sunday, and talked about this horrible bill, which is a Needles on Wheels involuntary outpatient commitment bill for California, which would require you to take your meds, even if you're released from a psychiatric hospital, or police and doctors could come to your, nurses could come to your house and forcibly medicate you or rearrest you and take you back into custody. And it's a grim bill. It looks like it passed the Senate Appropriations Committee 7-2. McPherson abstained, for those who are interested. It passed the Assembly 65-1 on the first vote, and still pending before the Assembly, as I understand it. It passed the Senate, however, a few days ago, the State Senate, 27-8, and will go to the State Assembly probably tomorrow. And according to Representative Thompson's office, I should say Assemblywoman Thompson's office, it's going to be smooth sailing. She's the one who's backing this bad bill. The thing to do if you're interested is leave a message on the Huff line, and I'll try to give you more information on how to fight it. My understanding is it may well be a foregone conclusion at this point, but you can always send a message to your assemblyman, and I guess that's who is our local assemblyman here? Fred Keeley, and tell him to speak out against this bill. Call up Fred Keeley and say no on AB 1421. AB 1421, Needles on Wheels. I'm going to shortly make a phone call and start the ball rolling with the interviews that I've lined up, but I'm going to first play a few interviews on the street first. There was quite a eventful few days at the Downtown for All table. As you know, a week ago Monday, Becky Johnson was arrested on misdemeanor vandalism, the first time such a serious charge, up to a year in jail, $1,000 fine. Has been leveled against erasable chalkers. And I'm going to play a little bit of the tape that happened a week later. That was on Monday, several days ago, when we have this Merry Monday celebration, which the Downtown for All folks do, along with Food Not Bombs, and candidates Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt, as well as other candidates who are welcome to attend of the city council. There's sort of a soapboxing, and then we also do video showings from a battery-operated television. And there was quite an event. I'm going to play you some of that now. So stay with us.
I'll speak to you in a moment. but we're going to have a special guest speaker now. She's kind of featured in this flyer, in case you've read it. A week ago at this address, Becky Johnson was taken to jail for chalking with erasable chalk, not on the sidewalk, which now is supposedly illegal under the municipal code, but never has been before, but chalking along the side of the street, a message about how the city arrests homeless people, has a sleeping ban, and criminalizes folks gathering and sitting on the sidewalk simply to get rid of the homeless. She was taken to jail. She was there for 6 hours. She was held on a $1,000 bail. She's going to talk about this. And this, to me, is a very significant and ominous turn in Santa Cruz city politics. Becky has been doing this for years, and she has never been taken and booked to jail except a week ago. The police and the merchants are cracking down. Are they cracking down for violence or for hard drug sales or for rape? No, they're cracking down for political dissent. They're cracking down for writing along the edge of the street what the truth is downtown about what the city council is doing, what these hosts and these police are doing, which is making it very uncomfortable and very unpleasant for poor people to be in this area, and also running street performers off, simply to please the prejudices of a few merchants. Here's Becky Johnson.
Well, you know, the criminal returns to the scene of the crime, and here I was, you know, just a week ago with...
And we interrupt this fine speech by Becky Johnson, which hopefully we can return to, because we have an even, I want to say even finer speech, but we have a live person, and live people get preference, particularly people calling in from Sacramento. On the line with us is Kelly Tanalapi, and she is an attorney in Sacramento. We've talked to you before, Kelly, and you are, of course, the woman who successfully defended Mr. McManus against three charges of camping, one acquittal and two hung, and you're here to give us some updates. Apparently the city attorney is back in the ring, reeling and striking out again.
They decided to retry the two counts that were hung. And it came as a real surprise to quite a few of us because the jury was hung. It was kind of interesting. They were hung half and half on just half of the elements of the necessity defense. They agreed that we met the burden of proof for the other half of the elements of necessity defense. So I take it as that saying we were about three-quarters of the way there, and they still decided to retry.
Now, are they just trying to exhaust you with these trials? I mean, they have more resources than you do, right?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Now, this, the public defender, you're are you doing this on your own, out of your own pocket, or is this a public defender paid thing, or what?
No, the first time I did it out of my own pocket. For the latter half of it, for the first few months that I worked up the case, I was working for the public defender using their resources, and then the last part of it, I was a sole practitioner, and I was just volunteering my time, and I was still using some of the public defender's resources, investigation, research, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. But this time, it's all your bucks?
Now, this time around, well, that's what I was afraid of. I asked the Indigent Defense Panel here in Sacramento if they would appoint me if the public defender declared an overload, and they said that they thought that was reasonable, and they went ahead and did that. So right now I'm going to be compensated for that, which is good. Which was it.
So how many, I mean, you told us before this took, you know, what, 100 hours of research and work to defend in the first trial where the three camping charges were essentially, at least no convictions were obtained, and as you pointed out, the six elements of this necessity defense, which says that the need to camp and sleep is a more important thing to avert a greater evil than the need to follow this rather restrictive anti-homeless keep the environment pristine at the cost of human rights and human needs, a
right.
law that's in force. So you, when is the trial coming up?
Right now the trial date is set for September 18th.
Mm-hmm.
The city attorney already asked to try to continue it past that date. They're trying to investigate. I think that they want to do quite a bit of discovery that they didn't think of doing the first time. It's going to be interesting once they have a chance to look at the transcripts to kind of rethink how they approach this. I personally, at first, wanted to just go ahead and try this right away to keep them from putting too much of an act together. But the more I talk to some patrons around here, I'm actually going to do a bit of research and regrouping myself. I'm going to bring in some issues and focus on some issues that I set aside the first time.
Did you use expert testimony about, I know you brought up, of course, the famous ICORN decision, which requires the judge to grant a necessity defense be shown to the jury if you want to try to prove those six elements.
Right.
But
right.
but you had a rather, should we say, not the most middle-class guy who camps out. He's in his 50s. He probably has had some run-ins with the law in the past. He has three dogs. He's the kind of, you know, unideal candidate that, you know, a lot of attorneys might say, hey, we don't want to take you in front of a jury, you know, hey, cop a plea.
Right, right. It's interesting, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons why they chose this case to try. This is kind of a test case. They would have the most, the greatest likelihood of winning this case, of any. This time around, we're still going to argue the necessity defense. That's always going to be a focus. But we're going to try to bring in some expert witnesses to explain to the jury a little bit better what the reasonable standards should be for what you expect from a homeless person. One of the elements of the necessity defense that the jury really got hung up on was that the belief that the person had no reasonable alternative was objectively reasonable under all circumstances. And what the jurors really had a hard time doing was putting themselves in this guy's seat. A lot of people, you know, come from middle-class background, have lots of resources, have had lots of resources and support around them their entire lives. It's really hard for them to try to
understand the issue that,
yeah.
that, you know, that I guess the guy is saying, look, I had no other alternative but to camp on the river. And they're saying, well, wait a minute, you could have called a friend, you could have maybe saved up enough money to go to a motel for a night, you could have moved to Fresno,
right.
you know, you could have slept in somebody else's vehicle somewhere.
Right.
You know, all these things could have happened.
Yeah, there's a typical jurist, Mr. Smith, thinking of all the things that Mr. Smith could have done if he was in that situation. They have to step out of that. And I tried to do my best to, you know, create this portrait of what it really is like to be, you know, Mr. McManus for a day. But I've talked to some people, and I think this time around I might bring in a psychologist that could expand a little bit more on what the mental frame or the mentality is for a homeless person at any time, how different it is, and what expectations and how different those expectations should be.
Well, isn't a key factor as in Santa Cruz, we have tonight shelter, meaning floor space on the floor, for 50 people and on the church floors for 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people out there. Isn't this kind of stark figure something that you can get social service providers to testify to, in essence saying, and there are going to be other people taken in preference to Mr. McManus because they have medical problems, because they're single women, because they're women with children.
Right.
I mean, isn't that sort of, you know, the smoking gun you can use to, in essence, dump their argument that there are, quote, reasonable alternatives?
Well, we really focused on that the first time. And we did have people come in from the shelters in town to describe their services and what are the requirements? Can anybody under the sun just walk in and get a place to stay tonight? You know, what hoops do they have to jump through? What requirements do you have? We focused quite a bit on that, and I think we were successful, and we'll go through the same routine the second time. But one thing that the jurors really got stuck on was the fact that on one of the nights that he was charged, there may have been beds available at one of these facilities. And so I need to expand on the jury's understanding of what the reasonable standard is for them to expect.
Now, one of the issues here that you had, as well as in Santa Barbara, where the Cooper and Ridley cases involved not quite the same because there was people in a vehicle, but the issue of dogs and pets and whether these are some sort of middle-class accoutrements that, gosh, what is this homeless person doing with
right.
it? And why don't they sell their jewelry and their dogs?
Right.
You know?
Wouldn't it be easy just to get rid of the pets?
Right.
And,
and you had dog lovers on the jury, you pointed out, pet lovers.
Yeah.
How is this going to, are you going to feature this consideration again? Or?
Mm-hmm. And a little bit more, I'm going to focus on it a little bit more than I did the first time, I think. I even have tossed the idea around of bringing in an expert witness who is a veterinarian who's worked for years together with some homeless organizations and could give the jury a sense of how common it is for homeless people to have pets. And
perhaps how important it is?
How important it is to them.
Mm-hmm.
What are the reasons that he sees? What kind of relationships does he observe between these people and their pets?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's not... It might be easy for some of the jurors who are not pet lovers to compare this to a toy or a car or, you know, some object, some item that you can buy today, sell tomorrow, get another one the next day. But to have somebody really come in and focus on, you know, what kind of relationships are built up between these people. And again, the psychologist that I bring in may add some to that, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you planning some kind of a civil suit for damages if you win this case?
That's definitely a thought.
Because it's that kind of thing which I think deters the police. I mean,
right.
If they actually feel it's going to be, a kick in the wallet. You know?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we have been, bringing in so much publicity. I think that there's a real kick in their image right now.
Mm-hmm.
They keep coming on the news, showing how over 900 people have been arrested or cited for unlawful camping, and yet not one case has gone to trial, and,
So in essence, they simply used a
trial.
They used a lot of harass people is what that means, right?
Yeah, it just means to harass.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring some of that in some way or another in this case also. The fact that they're retrying the case together with the way that Mr. McManus has been treated by the rangers that work in the area, and the fact that he's been cited many times where some other people who are doing the same thing he's doing have rarely been cited, or if they were cited, the cases were dismissed right away. They really picked out Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And, we've heard other people say that the rangers walk around and say, hey, do you guys know where Billy's at? Where's Billy? How's Billy doing? Let him know we're looking for him. So,
it's pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah. We want to bring that in. At a certain point, if this was some reason, a personal or a political reason that the rangers and the city attorney had to bring this case as a test case, that's not a valid reason to prosecute, especially when you've already tried once and you have good reason to believe that this may not be a successful case.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a big issue the second time around.
So did the media actually cover this further? I know when we talked, they did an initial story, but then they didn't really do a final, they actually covered the actual results of the trial and so forth?
They did. The day after you and I spoke, it was on Channel 3 here in Sacramento, KPRA.
Mm-hmm. Sacramento B?
Also picked it up, or Channel 10, rather.
Mm-hmm.
We've had coverage in the newspaper. We had a fantastic editorial in the newspaper. I think you and I had discussed that.
Yeah, we did see the editorial. I'm just wondering if there was actually a news coverage in the B. I didn't check that. I guess if you got it on the TV media.
Yet, as far as I am aware, no one brought it to my attention if we've had any news coverage. We've had basically editorial coverage.
Mm-hmm.
There was one columnist that first covered this, and she is very supportive of the homeless, and so it was a somewhat slanted thing. And then
send her to Santa Cruz, please.
Pardon me?
Send her to Santa Cruz. Yeah, we have a bunch of... it's hard to describe right-wing bigots in terms of columnists here, and
really?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Well, Kelly, we have, you know, I would like to talk to you for longer, but we have a backed-up schedule. We have a local activist who's, I should have reached 10 minutes ago, but we're kind of behind schedule here, and I encourage Fred to hang in there. We're going to get to him in a moment. Is there something you want to sum up with before we move on? And I will, of course, be trying to get back to you for updates. And I know we're going to be speaking later, hopefully, to shock people about the other victory in Sacramento, the dropping of the charges against activists who were trying to bring a petition to the governor about the right to sleep.
Right. You know, I was just going to mention this. There's a local person who works together with... the Legal Services in Northern California office here in Sacramento, who mentioned the other day that, in his opinion, though the city attorney will refile, this victory shook the foundation of the city and county policy towards the homeless. I was in the county exec's office last Wednesday, and the implications of the case were discussed with great concern. If the necessity defense is established and successful, which so far it has been, the city and county will have to rethink the policies which criminalize the homeless. So that was pretty exciting to see that.
That is really exciting. And that's, of course, we thought what had happened in Santa Barbara. Their response, of course, is to abandon jury trials and even infraction trials in favor of administrative no parking here, no parking there processes, which may be the next step. We've been talking with Kelly Tanalapi, whose good work in Sacramento is... causing tremors in the Sacramento establishment. Kelly, thanks for being with us, and hey, we're going to get back to you again if you're available.
Hope so.
Hey.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
I went down to 10 Bodega, a funky corner store. And what I saw, it knocked me to the floor. Lots of jars full of cigars at $30 each. A neon sign imported wine and microbrewery sheets. And there's no more single cigarettes and no more bargain beer. The writing's on the wall, my friends, the end is drawing near. SUVs are everywhere, old trucks cannot be found. The place where I grew up, I don't know my own hometown. Just look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. Shame you got exalted, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's a nice designer. The city that I knew is gone, this city is for sale. Apartments, farms, and condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Watch the city die. Yeah, we got you lost. It's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural,
And that was City for Sale from City for Sale, which is the Mime Troupe production that was around, I think it was 2 years ago, right before 1600, maybe it was 3 years ago, before Eating It and 1600 Transylvania Avenue, which were the two more recent Mime Troupe productions, plus, of course, this year's Mr. Smith Goes to Obscurestan. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.microradio.net/FRSC. Our phone number is, grab a pencil or just go to a phone, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And Free Radio Santa Cruz, what you're listening to, like to hear from you. And we've got a real fast-packed show, but that doesn't mean there isn't time for some calls, so you've got the option to call in. We were listening before to... was it Mary Monday? Becky Johnson, who was arrested for not just chalking on the sidewalk, a bizarre interpretation of a municipal code, it's being turned against activists, but a new dimension in police harassment, vandalism, misdemeanor vandalism, as though erasable chalk sold in stores downtown would actually have some real impact on the sidewalk. It's clearly an attempt to shut down political protest, again, to placate and please merchants downtown who, some of whom, find the First Amendment perhaps a little too burdensome for their commercial cares. Let's hear some more of what happened on Merry Monday, which every Monday at 4:30, come on down, every day at 4:30, come on down to Cooper and Pacific, and give us a call if you're interested, off-air, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or on-air at 427-3772.
Trying to get my message out to the community of Santa Cruz, to the merchants, to the shoppers, the people that live here and that consider Santa Cruz their community, and Pacific Avenue to be the center of their community. I've been using sidewalk chalk for a long time. It's not my avocation, but it's really a good way of putting a message there that anybody walking by can see, and it could be a message that's designed to provoke people to think. I want the people in Santa Cruz to think about the sleeping ban. Most of the people that live here don't even know there's a sleeping ban. The sleeping ban's a law that makes it illegal to sleep at night between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. subject to a $54 fine. That's anywhere out of doors or in a vehicle. Subsequent offenses can result in misdemeanor arrest, and a misdemeanor arrest can have a maximum charge of a year in jail and $10,000 fine. For the act of sleeping, something that everybody does at night, that people take for granted, that when I tell people that there's a law against sleep, they start laughing and they go, oh, that's ridiculous. What is it? One of those laws like you can't shoot buffalo from the platform of a moving train, or, you know, one of those old laws on the books that nobody ever enforces anymore? If only it were so. No, the sleeping ban is a pet ordinance of the police. They just love to use the sleeping ban and go against homeless people. Late at night, 2:30 in the morning, they'll be in their vehicle parked out in some weedy, godforsaken little corners out of the way as they could possibly find in this city. And the cops will start banging on their vehicle with their flashlights and scaring the shit out of them. And then when they wake up or come and talk to them, then the cops give them a $54 ticket. And common
cents says that if a homeless person has $54 for a sleeping ticket, they've got $40 for a motel room. I mean, the reason they're sleeping out of doors is that the housing is so high that so many people can't even afford a roof over their head. They can't afford food, too. I mean, what kind of town is this that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night? And that was my message that I chalked on the sidewalk Monday. I've been so badly misquoted. I heard that they were talking about my case on KGO Radio last Wednesday, and they weren't being too kind to me either. They said I chalked obscenities. Well, it's kind of true. I think the sleeping ban is an obscenity. But I didn't use any swear words, if that's what they meant. Noise here. The officers don't seem too concerned about that. But I suppose if I had a little dinky microphone, they'd be very concerned about that. The message that I chalked on the sidewalk, I wrote, "Are we so mean-spirited that we would deny a homeless person the right to sleep at night? To beg for food after dark with a sign, or to cover up with a blanket?" And unfortunately, the answer to that is yes, we are. Because it's also illegal to cover up with a blanket between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m., which is coincidentally the coldest time of the night. But the cops can write a $54 ticket, and they can seize your blanket too, as either evidence of a crime or an implement of a crime. And the cops don't even have to tell you where you can go to sleep legally. But at 2:30 in the morning, there's nowhere. You can't get into the ISSP program at 2:30 in the morning. You can't get into the armory when it's open at 2:30 a.m. This is clear and simple, a brutal, secret message that the police and the city council that promotes it, certainly the three candidates, the three former council members who are running for office, please remember, whatever you do, don't vote for Mike Rodkin. Don't vote for Cynthia Matthews, and please don't vote for Tim Fitzmaurice. All three of these people who are running for re-election do not deserve our votes. The way they treat homeless people and the poor in this town is shameful. The way that they vote in more and more budget for police to harass homeless people is obscene. We need that money for a lot of good things. We need the money in the city budget for the roads and for to get clean water. We need it for all kinds of public services that are really hurting right now. But the police budget is the fattest budget in the city. It's 33% of the general fund. It's $15 million this year. There are 135 employees on the police force in Santa Cruz, and we're only a population of 54,000. Give me a break. I want to talk a little bit about what happened on Monday. Actually, I want to back up a little bit and talk about what happened on Friday. I wasn't here. I read it in the paper that there was a melee that broke out. Gang fights on this very location, according to the Sentinel, and of course, we all believe what's written in the Sentinel. There were up to 7 fights on this corner. There was a man who was knifed across the street and had to go to the hospital. And yet, police made no arrests.
They were harassing homeless.
7 fights. This is violence. These are violent crimes that are taking place that the police witnessed, and they made no arrests.
But Monday they made an arrest. They arrested me for chalking in the gutter. Misdemeanor vandalism. It's outrageous. And somehow, you know, this chalking, they only seem to cite or arrest either homeless people or homeless activists. Why is that, do you suppose? Why is it that the debasing the sidewalk ordinance has been on the books since 1964? Why is it that hopscotch was never illegal before? When did it become illegal? Well, it became illegal when the police decided it was illegal. Now, the messages that I write on with chalk on the sidewalk, those are First Amendment protected messages. I have a responsibility to this community to bring forth and educate this community on the kinds of inhumane treatment that homeless people suffer on a daily basis in this town. Their loss of their civil rights, the selective enforcement they suffer from the police and the hosts, and the and the new downtown ordinances. Let's see, what kind of town do we have here with the new downtown ordinances? Well, let's see, no bubble blowing, no hacky sack, no frisbee, no juggling, no don't you dare play jacks, hopscotch, of course, forget that.
Well, I think we should get rid of that statue over there of Tom Scribner before we start making all these laws.
Maybe you'd like to speak next, sir. Making it a crime to sit down, making it a crime to stand in a doorway, making it a crime to ask for a spare change, making it a crime to sit on the sidewalk.
I think he's doing a sidewalk sitting deal right now.
Now, when did sitting on the sidewalk exactly become a criminal act in anyone's mind? I mean, if you're not obstructing the sidewalk, if you're not threatening anyone, if it's a wide enough sidewalk that people can get around you, why would that be a crime? It would be a crime in a city that just wants to move along the undesirables, the unwashed, the people who are fashion challenged, people who don't have credit cards, people who don't have enough money in their checkbooks or to go in and buy all the overpriced merchandise that's sold in these stores. I'm not against the merchants. I think merchants are fine. They provide a lot of goods and services for our community. They're entitled to a profit, but they don't own the street.
Here we have Richard, who was just harassed. All right. All right, while the last speaker, Becky Johnson, was talking about her arrest and being held on a $1,000 fine, notice these police officers are doing nothing while motorcycles are making huge amounts of noise downtown. So instead, when musicians playing acoustic guitars start playing, suddenly we see a gathering of police officers on the periphery, and more police officers over there. Is this a riotous assembly? Are people threatening to break windows? No, they are sitting and peacefully listening to political candidates running for city council offices. But police are writing tickets downtown for violations of sitting down. Sitting on the sidewalk, you see, is a crime. Sitting for poor people is a crime. Sitting directly on the sidewalk is a crime. If you bring your own chair, that's okay. But if you don't have the money to bring your own chair, the police have their ticket books over there ready to go.
That's the new Santa Cruz. That's the $35 to $40 an hour police officers. That's Sergeant Baker leaning against a building. And that's the kind of law that he wants to make it illegal. Illegal to do for most people, but not for police officers, you see? Because they're a special class of people. They not only get to violate the law, they actually get to write the laws. These downtown ordinances came out of the office of Chief Belcher, our police chief. So I've interrupted this flow of activity here of the normal speaking because I see police officers gathering to harass a legal and peaceful assembly. Just as a week ago, tickets were written and a woman dragged off to jail for writing with erasable chalk along this area right off the sidewalk. Erasable chalk could be eliminated by water in 5 minutes or less. Now you better watch out. This candidate here is violating the law as we speak. There are police officers present. It's illegal to stand on the lip of a planter. It's illegal to sit on the lip of a planter in Santa Cruz. And these men and a few misguided police women have their ticket books ready to go. Why? What is going on here? Maybe Thomas Levitt, city council candidate, can explain it for us. Then they'll ignore us.
Hello. My name's Thomas Levitt, and I'm running for city council. Last week, Becky Johnson was arrested for misdemeanor vandalism. As you can see, obviously, there was like a lot of permanent damage. I guess I don't see any permanent damage. I wish all vandalism was like that. Our police department negotiated their last contract, and they got $1 million a year in extra retirement benefits. They get to retire. Retirement system. The police and this department and this city are a tool of the ruling political class. Becky Johnson's arrest was selective enforcement. There's no question about it. They arrested her just like they arrested Jim Costner in this video. Because those people disturb the ruling class. That's whatever the police feel violates an ordinance. The new downtown ordinances were written to give the police what they've been asking for years, which is more tools, quote unquote tools.
Thomas, the city needs more police money because look how many police officers are here. We need more money for the police budget.
Chief Belcher says that the average city our size spends over 50% of its budget on the police. And we only spend 33%. That's not enough. $15 million out of $45 million obviously isn't enough. These downtown ordinances were written for one purpose and one purpose only, to give the police more tools, quote unquote, to harass and drive away homeless people. Very simple.
Now here's a man with a medical problem, but the police are forcing him to get up. This is even a violation of the downtown ordinance. How many police officers are here? One, two, three, a sergeant.
Over there. This is your tax dollars at work, folks, just like it was last week, just like it'll be again next week. Your tax dollars being spent very effectively.
Here's a criminal. What's he being arrested for? What are you being arrested for?
Is it a coincidence or not that the police happen to gather here when we're having this little event? That they happen to arrest people during this little event? I don't think it's a coincidence. The progressives, in this town and on this city council operate out of fear.
Laying down on the sidewalk, not in the city.
I've been told by the progressives, unelected progressive city council person, that the downtown ordinances were passed out of fear. Out of fear that the merchants would come out in favor of repealing the utility tax. The politicians in this town run on fear. I've been told by many people that I have a great chance for getting elected to city council if Rockin and Matthews are knocked out by Aldo's lawsuit. Well, you know what? That's fear. That's fear of the progressive agenda. That's fear of the average person motivating the political class in this city. I think I can win. I think the progressives can win on the issues. On simple, basic human rights. The sleeping ban is a matter of simple justice. A beggar in the streets of Calcutta has more hope than a homeless person on the streets of Santa Cruz. And that's true. That person there is legal. He can ask for money. That culture respects that. Here, they drive people away for exercising the basic constitutional right of freedom of speech. They claim it's time, place, and manner. But you can't time, place, and manner people out of existence. That's simple.
So I'm going over to the arrest here of a tall man from Camp Paradise. Hi, are you under arrest, or?
I don't know if I'm under arrest yet. All I did was lay down on the sidewalk and had a cup of soup. My back was hurting real bad, and I stretched a little bit because my back was in a lot of pain. I've got 9 ruptured discs in my lower back. I'm tremendously in a lot of pain. So
and what is your name?
Richard Parsons.
How do you spell the last?
Parsons, P-A-R-S-O-N-S.
Okay, it's about 6:05. Several police officers. You can ask the police officers if you're under arrest. If you're not, you have the right to go back to what you were doing.
Actually, they have my ID, and they're checking with the sergeant right now for some reason to see if I have any warrants. I have no warrants.
Would you like to sit down?
Yeah, I'd really like to be able to sit down. Can I sit down?
Absolutely. Thank you.
It was in the open paper. And they sent it like they got a job.
This man is being arrested for lying down on the sidewalk. He is a man with a medical condition, so he has the right to lie down where he needs to, even under the city law. Yet we have... how many police officers? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 police officers at $35 an hour, at least your taxpayer dollars, arresting this one dangerous criminal for lying down on the sidewalk.
Don't forget to... I'm running for city council. We're spending it to arrest people. We're spending it to house people in the jail at some ridiculous amount per year.
Why are 5 police officers here harassing one person for lying down on the sidewalk? They're here to make you afraid. That is what they're here to do. They don't care about him. He's just an example. This is their power to make us all afraid. Don't sit down. Don't stop. Keep shopping. That's the motto.
I am not afraid of the merchants. I am not afraid of the ruling political class in this city. I will not be silenced.
tell me why
that fear. I will not operate out of fear like our current progressive majority that is afraid to run on its own issues.
With your own body.
I'll never have a job. I'll never have a home. If you squat, they throw you in the slammer. If you squat, throw you in the slammer. No future, no bucks, no hope, no love. Life sucks, life sucks, life sucks, life sucks. Got nuclear reactors, but we got no power. The rich got money, but we're poor by the hour. Got a shuttle in space. Got a fat friend that you can make a CD. When did they go and vanish?
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, or Bathrobes Pierre Robert, as I sometimes call myself. We got about 45 minutes left on this show. Every Thursday from 6 to 8, I sound off. And every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 in the afternoon. And I'm also occasionally down at the Downtown for All table, if you want to join us down there. That happens, well, we're trying to make it as many days as possible at 4:30 in the afternoon till around 6:30. Today we had hot soup. We try to do that twice a week, usually Tuesdays and Thursdays, sometimes maybe Tuesdays and Fridays. Our soup maker is a Cabrillo College conflict. And it's time to get together and do something. As you heard, there's some real problems downtown in terms of massive police harassment and these new blank check downtown ordinances, which we are trying to awaken the community about. We've got an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Paula Lamazzi.
Hey.
I'm here with Cliff Crooks. We have the speakerphone. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. I'm speak up a little bit if you can.
Oh, you have volume or something?
Give us more volume.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
A little bit louder.
Well, I guess that's as loud as it goes, so I guess we should pick up the phone. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, should I pick up the phone then? You can't hear me well?
It's okay. I got to play with the voice levels.
Okay.
You're calling from Sacramento. You're with the Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, right?
Yes, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee.
And you're some of those people who got arrested way back in July for what? Were you threatening to burn down the Capitol? What were you doing there?
No, we were sitting around on Capitol grounds, we were kind of hoping the governor would respond and protect us from the city's anti-sleeping laws. And we were there, and you know, we were just sitting around talking and about the issue among eight. Well, there's more than eight of us, and someone was playing guitar for a while.
Yeah, there were 20 of us at that point.
Was there? Yeah.
So I think I hear you're Paul, and I guess that other deeper voice in the background, that's Cliff Crooks, another one of your questionable Sacramento activists.
That's right.
Yeah, so we just had a conversation with Kelly Tanalapi on the McManus victory about the using the necessity defense to fight back and crush the camping ticket harassment. What's happening with camping tickets there? Are the police continuing to be as rabid as ever?
They slowed down for a long time, and it was like nobody was getting camping tickets for a long time after he won. And what was it, just like when was it Wednesday? No, it was Friday morning. A bunch of people got arrested and taken to jail for sleeping on the steps of some church in Sacramento, and they didn't get out until Wednesday.
Well, sleeping on the steps of a church without the official permission of the government, isn't that criminal behavior?
Yeah.
Well, they had permission from the church.
Yeah, but, you know, churches... actually, it's interesting. I've just got an email here from Wiley Drake. You may remember Wiley down in Southern California. He's the fellow who was convicted of putting up homeless people inside his church in Buena Park, California. He's got, apparently his assistant was arrested, interrogated for 57 hours, and then released. Police apparently are trying to crack into the church through some kind of pretext, according to Wiley Drake, his First Southern Baptist Church. Apparently a particular town drunk, this is Wiley's account, had returned to disrupt the Sunday evening service. Buena Park police had been called two previous times by Pastor Drake and was told the man could not be arrested because, in the opinion of the officer, he was not drunk enough. The officer indicated the man had a bus ticket. He was agreeing to leave town, but he didn't leave, and he came back to interrupt the Sunday services. And they instructed the person who was watching cried to call the police. The guy, Mr. Smullen, did call the police, and the officer said, "What do you want done?" Smullen indicated Pastor Drake said he signed a citizen's arrest and have the drunk arrested. The officer then asked Mr. Smullen to come to the street to sign the paper. When Mr. Smullen stepped to the street to sign, Officer Thomas Reyes III said, "Put your hands behind your back." At that point, Mr. Smullen, again a man with the church, was handcuffed and placed in the rear seat of the patrol unit. When he was asked why he was being arrested, Mr. Reyes said, "I have prior knowledge of a warrant," which referred to a citation for no light on a bicycle that he'd gone to jail for and paid a $684 fine for back in March or April. It's an interesting story. I wanted to kind of ram it into this phone call because it sounds like the kind of thing I hear that Sacramento police do to homeless people. Apparently they do it in Buena Park in Southern California to people who try to help homeless people. So what's the church? Did the church respond by trying to defend these homeless people? Or I guess you didn't hear about it until these people got out of jail, right?
Yeah, and I just heard about it. The public defender's office is aware of it and everything, and you know, working with the people. I think a couple of the people came in today to the office, I believe.
Yeah, they told us about it. Uh-huh. I heard about it Saturday morning,
mm-hmm.
and they spent 5 days in jail. They were waking up. I guess they were brought into jail around 2:30 in the morning, 2:15 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
3:15.
So apparently the victory won by McManus and Kelly Tanalapi has kind of worn off. Now the police are back to their old bad habits.
I'm kind of really worried about the situation because they're taking because he had like three tickets. You probably talked to Kelly about that, about the three tickets he had, and one was not guilty. And then the other ones, the 11 jurors said not guilty, but one of them, you know, it was held out, so it was hung jury. And what really worries me is they're taking it back. They're going to retry those two counts.
Well, Kelly is pretty optimistic about it. When we talked to her an hour ago, she seemed to think that she was going to mount an even better defense this time with new expert witnesses, and that, you know, if it hangs again, it's going to look like the city. I mean, I don't think they can try them a third time. I mean, murder maybe, kidnap maybe, but camping?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I have confidence that the trial will go well. I'm just kind of worried about what's their problem, you know?
Yeah, they're spending $250,000 for trying to prosecute him, which says a whole lot about how Sacramento feels about the homeless in this town. And that much money trying to convict this man of camping.
Well, at least you have attorneys who are willing to try to defend homeless people here in Santa Cruz. I think we have one attorney, Chris Fredrickson, who has been struggling to help with camping cases. And we can't get other attorneys for love or money to get on board and try to assist in this really basic human rights violation. I mean, people are upset, as they should be, about the violation of civil rights of Arab Americans and, you know, people who are being held in Guantanamo Bay and people who are... library lists of people that are being looked at because now under the new Patriot Act they can secretly look at who looks at what books and demand librarians give up those lists and without even being able to tell the public that they're having to reveal your name to the feds. But when it comes to such an elementary thing as harassment and arrests and charges that get filed, you know, that get charged but not filed, for this basic sleeping and camping reality that, you know, people have to sleep. We all know it, and I don't know. I mean, I put that out here because I'm talking in Santa Cruz, not really in Sacramento. But in Sacramento, at least, you've got a few strong, courageous attorneys who are willing to take this on. Any chance of getting a restraining order, trying to get an injunction against this practice?
Well, yeah, I think that there's a lot of concern. All of a sudden, just all of a sudden, there's a lot of concern. Attorneys, just all of a sudden, and I think there's like legal services in Northern California are becoming really concerned about this issue, and that's really great.
Yeah, ever since we did a lot of more good than we thought on that rally.
Yeah, I think
the very next day, legal services jumped in and decided to do a class action suit. And so they've been to our office a couple times, picking up the complaint forms, and they're putting together a class action suit against this anti-camping ordinance.
Well, maybe what you should do is call a second rally, you know. And I mean, I think that, you know, now what you perhaps can do is do a continuing vigil on the grass of the Capitol building until such time as the governor does take some real action to deal with the reality of 647J, the anti-homeless no-lodging law, the reality in Sacramento that there are no legal places for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to sleep, the reality of a system of police harassment and city attorney prosecution that indicates, you know, a kind of, what are we going to say, Iraqi government-type insensitivity to its citizens, or Chinese government insensitivity to its citizens, or, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm picking out the devils that, you know, President Bush uses to parade before us, but, you know, what I'm saying is that you've got the ball rolling. You know, maybe it's time to roll it some more.
Yeah, you know, you just brought a thought up. Marvin Jensen just dropped back into town, and he's wanting to take this abuse that our citizens are suffering from the police to the United Nations. So evidently that's going to be his project while he's here. He's going to work in that area and try to get the United Nations on the United States about these civil rights violations that they're human rights. Yeah. Violations that they're violating our people with.
That's a great idea. I think we should the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project should invite a UN representative to visit a number of cities in California to investigate civil rights violations against the homeless.
Excellent. Yeah, that's an excellent idea. You want to talk to Marvin about that? That's going to be his head up.
Sure.
Main thing. His project here at Shock.
Yeah, I was emailing too about the you know, that follow-up letter. I was going to do a follow-up letter at least with the governor, and then Linda responded to, and a lot of other people responded to start giving this information and pleading with the assembly people and the senators to, you know, hitting them instead of just concentrating on the governor, because I don't really have that much confidence the governor's going to help us.
Well, I think the governor will only help you when it becomes so embarrassing.
Yeah.
And if you have big picture, you should have a big governor puppet out there. You know, you should be having someone mocking the governor, making speeches, and you know, I mean, you put him in a position where eventually he has to respond or look like an idiot. I mean, he's in the middle, supposedly, of an election campaign. Invite Simon to come and support your position. You know, I mean,
you brought that up because we're going to have a lot of news conferences pretty soon, and and the T-shirt thing that came up from Southern California with the slogans on it.
Mm-hmm.
Billy is going to be retried again, and after the jury is picked, we're going to stage a rally at the courthouse and hand out the T-shirts at that right at his trial. I guess that's when we're going to start. We've been talking to the attorneys about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds great. We're talking with Shock People, that's Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee activists, pretty much homeless people who are, you know, you couldn't. You're even locked out of your own office. You can't even use the phone in there at night because the great liberal bureaucrats who somehow provide office space don't trust you there at night.
Well, I don't want to get into that or anything.
I was struck with that, frankly. I thought that was outrageous.
Yeah, we've never had a lot of control over our own office.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, you can't trust homeless people. They might sleep there. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
well, that's why they don't trust us, because the last office we did do that. It was winter, we're home.
Yeah, we couldn't have that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's our own fault.
Well, you know, I was really impressed that you actually got this ball rolling in Santa Cruz when you and the folks came to the Right to Sleep Summit, where we had people from Dignity Village and Camp Paradise and Isla Vista's Home Sweet Home and Seattle's Tent City 3. And we all kind of talked about what needed to be done to support existing self-run homeless encampments and the broader issue of the civil rights of those thousands and thousands of other homeless people who are not fortunate enough to be in any kind of formal, officially recognized groups like Dignity Village or Tent City 3. Do you have any encampments in Sacramento that are getting together in any way? Are you getting any support from homeless people more than before?
Yeah, I don't know. I think so. I think we're getting a lot more participation in that area, too.
Yeah, they seem to be getting more excited about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard you did a workshop today figuring out ways of peaceful civil disobedience and civil resistance.
Oh, the workshop today, yeah. Tommy Klickenbeard with the Public Defender's Office, he's been a really great advocate, and he's, I think it's kind of spurred on by our, when we did the rally and the civil disobedience at the Capitol, we're missing a little bit of organization steps that we could improve on, and he's helping us get real organized and everything. And he's been really helping us a lot in understanding certain things that we might have done better.
I mean, it seems the figures are really pretty basic. I talked with Kelly about this. You know, you have space for, 300 people in shelters at night, and you have 3,000 homeless people there at least. I'm sure they're probably many times that, but that's one of the official figure, at least the minimum figure. So you have people who have no choice but to sleep outside, right?
Yeah.
And that being the case, any ordinary average person I'm not talking about average intelligence, but average common sense would just recognize people have got to sleep. And I think that you're going to find at least one juror on that McManus jury, on every other jury, that will say, unless you've got a place for people to go, particularly people who've spent a significant amount of time here, or who were born here, or have lived here, or have worked here, you can't arrest them for sleeping and for protecting themselves in encampments.
That's right.
Well, I appreciate your taking this call. Is there anything you want to say to us before we roll into the last half hour of the show here?
Well, just hi, Santa Cruz.
You gotta say hi to the rest of them.
Yeah.
Will do.
I think we're doing pretty good up here. For some reason, all of a sudden, this pendulum has swung the way towards the homeless. And we're getting just a lot of support from everywhere. You know, the legal aid is, like I say, doing a class action suit. And then Tommy Klickbeard, the public defender's office, they've won every single case so far.
Well, the reason is, I think, because you had the determination and the courage and the persistence to raise the issue so that, you know, even though you were taken to jail with seven other people, they saw that it couldn't be avoided anymore. And when you put the suffering in front of people's eyes, they don't like to see it, and they have to do something about it. And some people, most people, want to do something about it. I mean, you know, so I mean, that's really where the hope, I think, lies. We have our problems with these stupid and vicious downtown ordinances here in Santa Cruz of criminalized sitting on the sidewalk and all these other things. And the reason that we're out there shouting about it every day is because, at least I am, is my belief is that at core, most people don't want those laws. And they feel powerless, or they feel, well, it's, you know, the bureaucrats and the government will do what they're going to do. You can't fight City Hall. But you can fight City Hall. Yeah. I mean, it's a long and grueling fight, and it goes on and on. It'll go on in through for generation after generation until people's rights are guaranteed. But, you know, I think it's a fight that has to be fought.
Advertising, you know, getting the public to know, like your radio show here, let the public know what's really happening, because they're shocked when they find out. They don't believe it. But they're beginning to find out now. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that we're focusing on heavily here. That's what those T-shirts are about. And in conjunction with the trial, to let the public know that we're going to jail for sleeping, using all of our gear.
Well, I want one of them T-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, we got a donation of 500 T-shirts. And there's a, what do you call it, a silkscreen that's going to do 200 of them for us for free.
I get,
we got 500 of them, so we're like $250 we have to pay for the other. So, but I think we're going to be able to, I'm going to donate $100 of my money to it, so I'll bring us up to 300 shirts.
That sounds great. And remember, when you're holding regular events out there, like vigils, just bring the food and the people will come. That's the rule. So that's what we're doing in Santa Cruz and Sacramento. I think it's probably even more true.
We got food not bombs here, too. They're great.
Oh, they're great. Yeah. Food not bombs are right there for us every time.
Yeah, we got them here, too.
They just do it.
Right.
Expect that.
Wow. Well, listen, I appreciate we're talking with Paula and Cliff and anybody else there. That is, I guess it's just the two of you we've been talking to. Hey, everybody. Well, hi there. Hey, Marvin. Well, listen, you keep it up, and you know, you might also consider the possibility, since we are approaching, you know, the administration is ranting and raving about Iraq.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of people, I think, who are concerned about peace, and you might want to link the two issues: stop the war on the poor abroad and at home.
Yeah.
And turn it into a political fight there so you get some support from the broader activist peace community. I think that's what we'd like to maybe do here in Santa Cruz. We have a Peace Friday every 5 o'clock every Friday. We all kind of show up on Ocean Street, some of us, most of us sometimes, a few of us anyway, you know, with signs. And we get a lot of positive response. People's horns are honking. I think those issues need to be linked because I think this is a war that primarily impacts poor people all around the world. You know, and this, of course, mass expenditure of money on arms can, you know, is stealing from the, you know, from the mouths and from the health and from the shelter of all those who don't have it. Anyway, I'm saying things which probably everybody knows. Anything? I'll let you guys give us the last word.
Well, peaceful disobedience, and that's not the word anymore. It's not disobedience.
Civil necessity.
Yeah, peacefulness.
I like that.
Gotta be peaceful, though.
Peaceful. Yeah, well, hey, thank you very much, Cliff Crooks. And Paula, how do we pronounce your last name? Hey, thanks, Paula. And the rest of you there, too. And we'll be hoping to talk to you again soon.
Alrighty, thank you.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bob, suppose Cynthia's right. Suppose something went wrong. We could get sued.
Don't worry, chill out. Put your mind at ease. Success is assured by the five big D's. Deny, delay, dupe, dump, and divide. A formula, my potent and my herbicide. Deny, delay, dump, dupe, and divide. Let me take you on a 5D ride. Let's say we're responsible for causing harm. Let's say someone raises a big alarm. Just say it's not true. Say it's a lie. It works like a charm to just deny it.
Works like a charm to just deny it.
If the government says you gotta find a solution to pay for your environmental pollution, to levy a fine, just don't pay it. If they threaten legislation, just delay it.
If they threaten legislation, just delay it.
If different groups unite, get up in arms. Tree huggers in the trees and the farmers on the farms. Here's an elegant proposition. All you got to do is divide the opposition.
All you gotta do is divide the opposition.
Yeah, now watch me work. If we run into a problem, we go on the attack. Get ourselves a PR plaque, buy some TV time, pipe in the poop. The whole damn country can be duped.
The whole damn country can be duped.
Now, worst comes to worst, and it all goes to hell. No one's buying what we got to sell. A problem over here, just go over there. Dump it in the third world over there, who cares?
Dump it in the third world over there, who cares?
Deny, delay, dupe, dump and divide. Deny, delay, dupe, dump and divide.
I think we must all...
we take and why we can make the choices that we make. We're just visiting, not staying around. So we can poison the water, the air, and the ground. After all, why should we care? We know we'll be returning to our home.
Her away from the microphone.
No. Fight the power, Doc.
You're fired.
We're moving at a frightening speed. We're going where we think we need to be. We're smart, but we're not wise. It's time we opened up our eyes and hope we don't succeed. It's still not too late. We can put on the brakes and think before we proceed.
But there's not a chance that we can bleed.
I know that they arrested Freeze, the human statue, two nights ago at the coffee roasting company. And
they must be having a festival in the town. They need to clean up the streets a little bit so people aren't too disturbed.
And I heard a crazy thing, that they changed the law that you cannot hacky sack on the sidewalks because they didn't want people of long dreadlocked hair or whatever hacky sacking and hanging out. So they, that's kind of weird. Yes, me.
It's illegal to hacky sack now as of August 23rd. That is still legal up to then. Anywhere in a commercial district.
Commercial district?
Any commercial district, not just Pacific.
Commercial beach down by the boardwalk.
Right, including Mission Street, Soquel, various other places.
Okay. So this is America today. What is America tomorrow?
Well, just wake up tomorrow, and if you do, that is, and you'll find out.
Wake up tomorrow, and it's still the freest country in the world.
Big Brother will take care of us. It'll be okay.
Councilmember Rodkin will come into power.
Oil diapers for everyone in their old age.
Thank you. Well, the criminal skateboarder that was so justly stopped by the police department. Sir, aren't you ashamed of yourself?
Yeah, I'm very ashamed for skateboarding in the street. I'd like to thank the Santa Cruz Police Department.
What's your name?
Jason.
And Jason, I did see you skateboarding in the street, but were you in the street or on the sidewalk?
I was in the street.
And did you collide with a car, threaten an old lady, perhaps hit a couple of children?
Did not come by one person.
How long have you been skateboarding?
7 years.
And have you done this similar activity down here on Pacific before?
All the time.
And what's the law regarding skateboarding? I have to admit, I'm not too familiar with the skateboarding rules. I know you're not supposed to skateboard on the sidewalk, but are you allowed to skateboard in the street?
Pretty much. If you skateboard anywhere and a police officer sees you, you'll be written a ticket.
And is that because of the standing law or just because of your questionable outfit?
I think it has to do with my questionable outfit.
Now, how old are you?
I'm 18.
And do you have a vehicle or is this your vehicle?
This is my vehicle.
And are you a working person or are you one of these loitering, drug-dealing scumbags that hang out downtown?
I'm actually a college student.
I see. Well, you're one of them questionable out-of-town UCSC people who should be out of town longer so we can pass more laws while you're out of town. Now, let me see your ticket, man. I see it's a yellow ticket here. Jason McKenzie, skateboarding prohibited, 10.36041. And the officer, I believe there was a... male and a female, two female officers, badge 124. Have you ever gotten a ticket like this before?
Yeah, I have, actually.
How much are they? What's the fine?
Anywhere from 100 to 160.
And are you a man who's gotten a lot of these in the past?
I've had a few.
And have you noticed any upsurge of enforcement, or is it pretty much the same as before?
They pretty much always try to keep in everybody's face about skateboarding, so...
And what's your view about this? I mean, would you be interested in joining a skateboarders' rights group, for example?
Yeah, damn straight I would.
What you might want to do then is write your name, phone number, and email down there, and after it writes skateboarders' rights, and we'll try to get skateboarders together as a group to start lobbying for some protections.
I'd also like to say this won't stop me from skateboarding on the Pacific Garden Mall.
You're under arrest, officer. No, just fine. I mean, I hope it doesn't. Anything else you know about the rest of these laws? Laws about you can't be 14 feet from a building if you're performing or sitting or tabling. I don't know if you heard about that. Those are new laws that are being passed. Anyway, please. Sorry you got your ticket. I advise you to disqualify Mulligan, the referee of the basement. He's the guy that these tickets usually go to. He's a bad referee. He tends to unthinkingly accept testimony of police officers as factual when it may or may not be factual. And that depends on the situation.
Okay.
Yeah. We're looking at the two officers, one of whom wrote you the ticket, a male in shorts. What did he tell you? How did the ticket come about?
He told me that I obviously was fair warned because I picked up my skateboard when I saw them, so that they didn't have to give me a warning. I already knew.
And apparently you did.
I did, but I don't care.
I see. And you feel, should we say, not the most kindly disposed to this particular officer?
I don't.
What should skateboarders do? They're asking you can't skateboard anywhere in town. As means, what's the rationale for this?
It's pretty much that if you're skating in any public place, that you're being able to be ticketed.
But why is that? I mean, why should that be? What's their reason?
Because we're so-called vandals and trespassers.
Trespassing on the public property? We're all supposed to have access to the public.
Not people on skateboards.
That's true. You do look pretty fearsome. As a matter of fact, I may have to order you on your way, sir. It's almost 6 o'clock. About to go into the radio show here today on August 15th, and we're talking with Dennis Rehm. Hey, Dennis.
Hello.
You live in your vehicle?
I have been living in it for a little while. Yeah, I'm forced to because I've got a terminal illness.
And what is that illness?
It's no big secret. People I know, I've got hepatitis C and cirrhosis and a little bit of cancer on the side. You know.
You look like you're a little under the weather, a little weak. But police have not been making it easier for you.
They have written me about 8 or 10 tickets in the last week and a half to 2 weeks.
And what have you been doing? Breaking into stores? Assaulting women?
I have been trying to just sit still inside of the vehicle when I'm there. And otherwise, I just run around and pick up my meds and go see doctors, you know. But they want to come around and write these damn tickets over and over and over and over. You know, and I have even talked to the head of the abatement department. I've done everything I can. I've called the police department. And I've talked to Officer Shockey, who is in charge of the abatement department. She gave me a couple days. Well, I happened to catch the flu on top of what I got for illnesses. And I was unable to find somebody to work on my vehicle. The vehicle won't start. And I had somebody to come work on it. He had to go in the hospital, but they don't realize all this. They just want to write the tickets.
So you have somewhere around 9 tickets? Expired tags, some for camping?
Yeah, there's probably... If you want to count the expired tags, they're not for camping. They're for parking in the same space for over 72 hours. Storing a vehicle on a city street. Now, isn't that what everybody does when they park the damn things? That's why we buy tags, right?
You move it every 72 hours?
Or? No, I haven't been able for it to start, but I've gotten an okay from everybody in the neighborhood, from the Salvation Army. There's a guy across the street that runs a business. I've talked to apartment owners there, and they're all okay with it. But I told them all that, and they don't care.
Well,
Thanks, Dennis, and I'll review live when I play this tape what you did in the past fighting the camping ban. You did a signal, 13 or 14 court appearances trying to...
14 court appearances, yeah. And beat it my own way. I was a lawyer who was supposed to
appeal it.
Doing an appeal for me, and he screwed up.
Peter Leeming hasn't returned calls. Peter Leeming, call home.
Well, you know what? The short story of the whole thing is they can't write me a fucking warrant. When I call the warrant department, there's no warrants. They can't, so they have no way to collect the money.
You mean for the nine tickets you just got, or for that ticket?
No, for the one earlier ticket. Were 14 times.
Right. There was you, of course, talked about a camping ticket. You used the Flory Edwards Jacobs defense, which we're going to talk about later. I got to go to the show.
Never paid for the ticket, and they can't make me pay for it because they can't jail me on an infraction.
And that's something hopefully we're going to learn and show other people how to do.
When we have time, that was Dennis Rehm. You may remember hearing a tape of a later encounter where we learned that he had his vehicle towed. He had been put in jail for a day because he tried to shut the door against a police officer who came to his van. His vehicle was his van was towed. His truck was also apparently towed. And he still has not been able to get access to it as of a few days ago when I talked to him. This is a man who sounds pretty sick, taking 10 or 20 or 30 serious medications a day, and he's getting this kind of treatment from the police department. Again, all over the issue of parked vehicles and not apparently with specific complaints, although there may be complaints we don't know about, and I haven't gotten, obviously, the police side of the story, and perhaps at some point I can get that. We're approaching the end of the hour. A couple of quick announcements. The tomorrow is going to be a busy day in court and in the City Hall for me. As I mentioned before, 8:30 a.m., the Downtown Commission does its little dance for the City Council on exemptions. If you want to come and watch that, that's at 8:30 a.m. I've invited people to bring chalk. And we'll bring a bucket of water and a scrub brush because down on the mall today at the Downtown for All table, between cups of soup and flyers, which we give out, someone wrote, love on the sidewalk. And then, to show what the city was insisting he do, he grabbed some water and a scrub brush, and inside of 2 minutes, he didn't have to scrub it, he just did a little bit of water and a little bit of scrubbing, not much. I mean, it was just friction to the sidewalk. It was gone. The erasable chalk was, in fact, erasable. And so apparently the allegations that Becky Johnson is vandalizing the sidewalk, that Tim Rinker is defacing the sidewalk, that Nathaniel Kennedy deserves to be jailed for chalking all over the sidewalk and causing hundreds and hundreds of dollars of city money to be spent is bullshit, in a word, and essentially a tool used to harass activists. So that's interesting. So bring some chalk tomorrow to the Downtown Commission, and perhaps might be appropriate to... I don't wish to advise people to exercise their First Amendment rights exorbitantly by chalking with erasable chalk on the sidewalk, messages that are, in my mind, clearly First Amendment protected. But I think that people will have that option tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. I also have a court hearing tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Way back in January, Sergeant Baker, in his... second of three arrests of me, he seems to like to arrest me. He doesn't. I say arrest me because he chose on all three occasions to take me into custody and handcuff me and take me away, when on all three of those occasions he could simply have cited me and that would have been sufficient. None of the charges has resulted in a conviction. This one now goes to trial. I'm charged with obstructing the sidewalk. I don't have a trial tomorrow. I have a hearing. There's going to be a motion hearing. Attorney Chris Fredrickson is being kind enough to defend me. She is going to argue in court that the so-called obstructing the sidewalk law doesn't apply to people at political tables because there's a specific exemption in the very code section that Baker was using. I wasn't obstructing the sidewalk anyway, but even had I been, it wouldn't have been a legal ticket. This was a ticket on citizen's complaint from Matisse Selman, the owner of Sushi Now. And while I'm at it, remember to boycott Sushi Now, Alibaba's Cafe, New Leaf Market, and all the stores that have had a high-profile support for the downtown ordinances. And these include artisans, Pacific Art and Supply, unfortunately, where Sidewalk Chalk can be purchased. Cinema 9, where there are plenty of movies that lots of us like to go see. There's actually a list of the boycott suggestions at the table. In fact, I'm not even insisting people boycott all these places, but ask them why they're doing what they're doing. Raise the stakes by requesting to know what's going on. I'm also hoping that some kind of peaceful mediation between the Parks and Rec employee, Amia Duquette, who filed the citizen's arrest, demanded the arrest of Becky Johnson for this erasable chalk on the sidewalk, goes to some kind of mediation, and that Ms. Duquette does not press the charges against her, because I think that is disgraceful, frankly. And I was advised by a district attorney that it wasn't wise to speak of her by name because she's a potential witness and I could be accused of harassing a witness. I don't think I'm harassing a witness to raise an issue that when a Parks and Rec employee has someone arrested on a malicious vandalism charge for erasable chalk on the sidewalk, which can be erased in 5 minutes, there is something strange going on here, something very strange, particularly when that individual's vehicle is parked in the street as Mia Duquette's official Parks and Rec vehicle is parked there while she chose to make her, I think, absurd statement. We all make mistakes, but it's time to rectify, I think, those mistakes as quickly as possible. And when I saw her wandering around the mime troupe, donning an anti-Bush mask, I found myself remembering that we vote for city council officials who look liberal but end up being fascists underneath. And I don't want to suggest that of Ms. Duquette. I don't know her very well. I just know this one action, and I find it outrageous. And I'm sorry. That's how I feel about it. I'm not trying to intimidate any witnesses. I am trying to encourage, I think, appropriate behavior in the activist community here. So that's happening tomorrow. I'll be going to court on this motion, essentially to throw out the charges against me, which Sergeant Baker Broad had me arrested for after Matisse Selman asked for a citizen's arrest. And again, Baker didn't have to take me into custody. He just gave me a ticket, but chose instead to shut everything down, also to arrest another woman who apparently causing her some pain, although the Good Times thought she was faking it. They called their story staged and confused. It kind of made me aware that Good Times reporters like Laurel Chesky are just way divorced from the realities of the street. That's kind of too bad. In Portland, there's some interesting stuff happening, too. The activists there beat back the so-called Title 14 repressive legislation, sort of the sit-lie law, but the mayor then took administrative action behind the backs of all the organizations after assuring them that there was going to be, you know, they weren't going to bring it up and that until they'd reconsidered it thoroughly and gone through hearings. And the Portland activists are planning massive protests, very well organized with a lot of organizations involved, which may culminate in sit-ins in different offices and mass protests, which is what we need for the downtown ordinances here in Santa Cruz. I don't think we're that well organized yet, but I see that this kind of movement could build, particularly if the police are so foolish that they... Well, you heard them on Monday arresting, they cited a man for lying down, a man with, six ruptured discs in his back, he said, something to that effect, and he said he had to do so for medical purposes. This is a man who has a disabled placard in his vehicle. I've seen it. He actually was part of Camp Paradise and parked his vehicle at the Camp Paradise fundraising display. You may remember, those of you who are around, way back in front of Borders a year ago, and it was a disabled vehicle. He's a disabled person. But Sergeant Baker chose to harass him and instruct five or six police officers, including a lieutenant, to come down and continue this harassment, which actually had to do with our political rally. That's what he didn't like. He didn't like the people sitting around looking at the political rally. When one man dared to lie down because his back hurt, Baker moved in. Well, the next day, Tuesday, that was 2 days ago, I have a box of erasable chalk on the table, and I tell people that this is sold across the street at Pacific Arts, and you can buy it. And it's erasable, and you can use it if you wish, but you got to be aware that police may arrest you. And three people, bless their hearts, looked me in the eye and said, "I'm going to chalk on the sidewalk, and I'm just going to do it." And they did. I think two of them did it while police officers were actually standing there. They felt so strongly that the First Amendment requires standing up to unjust authority in that way, and I was very impressed. I didn't myself chalk that day, though I have chalked. I confess it, and I will continue to chalk.
at different points. I don't feel it vandalizes. No one has, as far as I know, has ever been convicted of erasable chalk on the public sidewalk, though one of the district attorneys has pointed out that many vandalism cases do involve chalking on private property, but none of these, as far as he knows, has ever been taken to trial. So we'll see if a jury trial upholds either the municipal code infraction, which talks about defacing the sidewalk, or the more serious malicious vandalism statute, which kind of came in with, I don't know if it was Proposition 21, I think it's more recent, it came in this year as a law, which Becky Johnson is charged with, and she's going to go to court on September 10th. I also should point out that Downtown for All is joining with the Saturn Cafe in a protest on September 9th that hopefully will be a large and productive and happy one. On another one of those merry Mondays, every day at 4:30 on Monday, we have the Speak Out Downtown, Downtown for All does. You heard some of it with Thomas Levitt and Steve Argue. The Speak Out from this past Monday happens every Monday. People are invited to come, and every day at 4:30, people are invited. That's going to be happening. We're also going to be tabling at the Homeless Service Center this Monday and inviting homeless people to come join this whole protest movement because it really impacts them. This is really an action taken to gentrify the downtown area and to make it unwelcome to people who are ragged because it's those people who can't use the cafes where you can sit down. They need to sit on the sidewalk, and sidewalk sitting spaces are vastly shrunk. And you may notice that downtown seems somewhat depopulated. At least I've noticed that. I want to remind you, AB 1421, the Needles on Wheels bill, your last chance to oppose it will probably be tonight and tomorrow. You should contact Assemblyman Fred Keeley. Go look in the phone book and get his number. Call him up because this very, very bad bill, which vastly reduces your protection. Right now you could be $51.50 for danger to self, danger to others, and gravely disabled. That is taken into a psych ward. However, after this passes, you will the same standard, I believe, will adhere. But then once you're on the ward, if you've been committed before, if you've been held before, they can insist on a much less of a standard. You may not be, they no longer regard you as gravely disabled or a danger to yourself or a danger to others, but you will still be held as, you can still be required for 6 months to take mind-numbing, tardive dyskinesia-inducing so-called medication and at your home. And if you don't take it, police will be there with a van and a nurse to shoot you up with the medication or to take you to a place of incarceration. That is coming up tomorrow for final vote in the assembly. That's AB 1421. You want to call Fred Keeley and talk to him. Get to the phone book and call Keeley. I don't know that his vote is going to make a lot of difference, but that seems to me to be the last. That's sort of the last thing that we can do on that particular score. Again, I was talking about Portland's sit-lie law. There's a lot. I'm getting a lot of information on.